So this question that we have right now is teed up. We had somebody ask in the community, what's the difference between a systems problem and a people problem? How do you know if you just have the wrong person in that seat?
Well, I think this is a it's a really good question, and it's a loaded question. I think the biggest mistake we do as owners, as business owners, is we go straight to blaming people for what is actually more of a systems failure. So I could honestly say, in my experience, especially in my younger years of owning a business, I was 100% guilty of running straight to blaming the people, and not necessarily looking at is this a systems problem? So I would go straight to blaming the people because I did have beautiful systems, but none of my people could even access them, right? I did the typical owner thing where I made them for me, but not for them. And then it didn't translate to them, or they didn't even have access to them. And so in my younger years, I 100% went straight to blaming the people and thinking I needed to fire them, I needed to replace them, right? A people, an employee, like, so if I had someone, like an employee missed a step, or maybe we had a quality issue, we did a bad clean, right? We had a bad customer experience over in WootRecruit or something, or someone forgot to even follow up after a first time job, I instantly would go to, oh my God, I need better people. Oh my gosh, like, why is Gabby sucking it up? Not the Gabby that's on here. I have another Gabby, Gabby. Gabby does our sales over and organize it. So I was like, oh my God, Gabby's sucking it up. Why is she not doing this, or she's not doing that? But sometimes you do need better people. Sometimes it is the people, but most of the time, I would say, like 80% of the time, or maybe even more, you need a better system, not better people, right? Before we want to jump to just run and say, oh, I need to replace this person, I need you to ask yourself three questions. And this is where, that whole you thought you trained them, but did you really? And so I want you to ask yourself three questions. And it's, did they know what was expected? Did they know what was expected? That's what question one. Was it clear? Was the process clear? Did they have a checklist? Did they have a standard? That was question one. Did they know what was expected? Did they know what good looked like? How many times have we had to bring in a technician because of quality? And when you tell them, hey, we lost a customer because of that, and they're shocked, they're like, oh my God, I didn't know that would happen. Well, like, what did you think was going to happen? And that was because, and that was our fault. We were not clear on the expectations. So, that was question one. Did they know what was expected? The question two is, were they trained how to do it? And I love this topic. This could be a whole nother topic in a topic. Were they trained how to do it? That's question two. So not just told once, but actually shown, practiced, and given feedback. So I want to know how many of us are guilty of showing someone something one time and expecting to say, oh, they're trained. They know how to do it now. Because we showed them one time, but did they actually? I want you to just put I in the chat if you're guilty of it. Even if you're an employee or a manager, like, you showed somebody one time how to do this, one time how to schedule a job. You showed them one time how to, send a quote. But that's not training. Training is actually having the system that they can refer back to. But actually shown, practiced, and given feedback, right? And coached. But also they have that resource to go back to. I have to admit, I have been guilty of that. It's definitely something. And I think sometimes, and Rico's here, he can contest to this, in our VS program, when we, have a new customer come in, and they may not have that training set up, right? They don't have anything. And so Rico's been very good at setting those expectations to say, like, hey, we understand that, and that's okay, but you are going to need to put some time aside to work with them. Because one of the biggest things we see why employees fail or teammates fail is because they tell them one time, but they don't take the time to actually show them, practice, and give some feedback.
Yeah, we call it like a plug and play type of concept. So we want to make sure we set that expectation clearly. And this is not only for our clients, but it's also for employees. Giving a good expectation to them, saying, hey, It's not that once you hire them, they already know the ins and outs of what you're going to do. You're going to take some time. And we, as in MongoDBS, we do give a realistic timeline for our clients to dedicate a period for them to hop on a meeting, to show, to show how these documents work and how the Loom videos you created actually work for them. Because for one, the way we won't be able to determine how an employee or how a new hire wants to learn. Some people would like to learn it visually. Some folks would like to learn it through a document. So that's also one thing to consider, as someone who wants to hire somebody.
Yeah, love that. Thank you, Rico. So question two was, were they trained how to do it and not just told once how to do it? And then the third question is, did they have the tools to succeed? Or were they expected to figure it out on their own? I'm laughing because that is so me. I don't suck. So I was looking at Allie. She's like, I suck at training. I'm like, I don't suck at training, but I suck at this. And I try to give them the tools, right? But I'm like, oh, I don't know, just figure it out. I'm still guilty of this one, but I have gotten so much better. So that was question three. Do they have the tools to succeed? Or are they just expected to figure it out on their own? If the answer is no to any of those questions, you have a systems problem, right? You have a systems problem. And, so when it's a people problem, now let's talk about when it's a people problem. That's when it's a systems problem. Ask yourself those three things, and that's going to help you determine if it's a systems problem. Then you have to look at the actual system to see if it's broken. That's just to see, is it a systems problem? So now let's talk about, is it a people problem? And so once the system exists, once the expectations are clear, once they've been trained and once they've been coached, like putting that time aside, like Rico said, putting that time aside to work with them, and they still do not get it, right? Now you're no longer dealing with that systems issue. You're more dealing with either a skill issue, a will issue, right? A skill issue is the talent. A will issue is kind of the want. Are they hungry? Do they want to do it? Or a seat issue. A seat issue is actually really one of my favorite topics. So these are three really interesting topics to, like, is it a skill issue, right? Skill can be trained sometimes. A will issue. I don't know if you can train will, right? If they don't, if it's called the lover who love Patrick Lencioni, they call it the lovable slacker, right? He's a great guy. We like him. Everybody likes him. He's fun. Oh, but he's just kind of lazy. He just does enough to get by. That's a lovable slacker. Or a seat issue. So I have gotten really, really, really good at the seat issue detection. We've done an exercise. We just did it like two, no, it was a month ago already. And we did it with the entire team of what are you great at and what do you suck at? Literally, we made them say those phrases up front so we could hear what are they great at. And it could be personal or professional. And then what do they suck at? And I love the transparency because some of them said they sucked at things that were actually the roles they were sitting in right now. And it was just great to hear because then you get a perspective of, hey, this is a great person. They have great values, but man, they're sitting in the wrong seat. And I've used that to help me reposition people in the company to say, hey, if you help me grow to this revenue, if you help me get to here, I will reposition you to the seat you want to be in, to your passion, to the things that drive you. And for me, that has been one of the biggest game changers, probably, for all of our businesses is repositioning based off of the seat. I've done it with cleaning technicians in the field that are now ops managers. I've done it with a cleaning technician in the field that went to sales. And then I've done it within the software companies from someone that was like customer success to head of the dev team. And then even like Rico came in as a WootRecruit account manager and I saw the potential in him and we repositioned a seat. And now he's having a great old time. And so sometimes the person is capable and they're just sitting in the wrong seat though. And other times they're just simply not aligned, right? With maybe your values or the standards of the business. And that's probably the hardest part to figure out. Is it a people problem or a systems problem? And so, simple test. If you hired someone else tomorrow, I love this question. We hear it all the time. If you had to hire someone else tomorrow to put them into this exact same environment, would they be suggested? Like, would you rehire this person tomorrow if you had to fill that seat again? And so it's a great test to ask yourself. If the answer is yes, then fix the system, right? If the answer is no, then it's time to reevaluate the person. If you had to rehire this person tomorrow, would you pick them again? And, you know, sometimes it's a struggle because you do want to rehire. You would rehire that person. Maybe you love that person. Maybe they're great. And then fix the system. But what if you don't know how to fix the system, right? What if that's the struggle is I have great people, but I have really crappy systems. So one of the biggest advantages that you can use right now is AI to help you with that. When it comes to, hey, I would rehire. Hey, I have great people. Hey, they're value aligned. It's harder to find people that fit your values than it is to fit your skill level, your skill need. And so that's where you could use AI to help you create those systems. And, you know, Leia is one of those that can help you create those roles, those trainings, capture them, house them. And one of our biggest mistakes, though, is that we often fire someone before fixing the issue. And so when we go to replace them, we put them back, we put the new person back in the problem. And then we wonder why we go through 5 admins, or I went through 5 salespeople, or hey, every VA I've ever used sucks. You know how many times we've heard that? Yeah, they don't work. No. You know, you're firing people for a systems problem, because if everyone you're rehiring to put in there isn't working, you're putting people back in before you're fixing the environment that's broken. So you want to make sure that you don't put people back in the same broken system, because that's that revolving door of, you know, when it gets super irritating, when you're ready to give up, right? When you just feel like nothing's working and you can't come up for air. So the next time someone makes a mistake, don't ask who messed this up. Don't even ask them why they messed this up. I need you to ask yourself, what allowed this to happen? I have a story. This was Chris. Chris, you can come in for this story. Chris is going to hate me. So remember, I think this was like 2 years ago. We were having issues in WootRecruit with something. I think customer success. It was certain things were happening, and you had went in and like built all kinds of systems, all kinds of processes, but the issue kept happening. You built checklists and you built like all of these things. And there were just so many things that the account managers were doing. But what happened was, and this is what a lot of people do, they built the system to fix the problem, but it kept allowing the problem to happen because they were fixing the problem. The system wasn't preventing the problem from happening. Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do remember that. And what we found through doing that was that what I was doing is, and this is now where we actually position it, is it was a reactive focus. And so what we say is it was a problem focused, not solution focused. And so I was building stuff reactively for a problem instead of building something proactively for a long-term solution.
Yes. And you kind of got to look at what you're building, because maybe your systems are allowing the problems to continue to happen. And then we blame the people. And so Chris was being reactive to what he was building, the systems to help the people. But in that reactive state, we were allowing the problem to continue. And we had a system on how to fix the problem. We didn't have a system on how to prevent it from happening, right? A proactive state versus a reactive state. And so when you go to ask yourself or go to work on things, you need to make sure, is it, you know, you're creating with that in mind. It's not thinking far enough ahead and making sure you ask yourself again, what allowed this to happen? So if 3 different people make the same mistake, right? Well, we talk about this in the book, right? With 5, if I tell 5 people, 5 different answers or 5 different ways to do something, then there's no right way. But if you have 5 people right? If five different people make the same mistake, it's almost never a people problem. You know, if you think about your past employees, your past technician, your past admin, your past sales, even if you have three or four people in the office now, if they're all making the same mistake or they've all made the same mistake, it's not a people problem. It's a system. It's a system problem, right? It's a system asking ordinary people to produce extraordinary consistency. And that's when you have to look at things and make sure that you fix the system first. Then you evaluate your people, right? Then you evaluate the person. Because great people in a broken system eventually look like poor performers. They do, right? While average people in a great system often produce exceptional results. Great question. Do we have any other questions in the chat, or do we want to move on to another one?
Libby, I had a few things teed up here, and I just wanted to clarify or dig a little bit deeper, one layer deeper, actually, and recap to some experiences that I had and what I've learned, well, especially for a few of the earlier topics. You mentioned with the onboarding and with the training, the skill issues, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, not the skill issues. I mean, the onboarding on where they trained, how to do it. Did they have the right tools?
Oh yeah.
So, what I learned was, cause I kept, there's issues that kept popping up. And so what I ended up, doing was I tacked on at the very end of our onboarding, that feedback loop. And, I started this first with the account managers and I asked everybody for their honest, genuine, transparent feedback and said, I'm not going to yell at you, but I need to figure this out. Otherwise it will stay this way for anybody else in the future. But, I said, what didn't feel right with onboarding, or what could have felt better or been improved on? And I watch it very in particular because I'm expecting a very intimate response. If I get, it was good, I'm going to dig in. I'm going to say there's always something that could be better. But for me, that's been super helpful because it gets it out of my head and me being the only one who's controlling the outcome. And now it's that feedback loop of new people coming in, how'd it go? And then helping them to improve the system. We did the same thing with the products as well, as they onboarded as customers. And they told us everything that felt wrong coming in, anything that could have been improved. So that's been super helpful for us to have that self-check to say, what don't we have?
Yeah, I also want to piggyback that one, if it's okay, you guys. Because in one of the VS, we also did that during our weekly meetings. There was also a time where I asked for their input. You know, what do you think we can improve on in our internal onboarding process? Because for those that don't have a VES yet, there's two phases into our onboarding. One is the internal onboarding, where we do the 1LD certification course and our introductory overview to the areas that they'll be working with you once they start with the client. And the second phase would be the clients, where we'll be doing the trainings for them. So it also allowed the VSs to have accountability and to think like a leader. While most of our VSs, you know, have already been in leadership positions, it kind of gave them a sense of refreshment, I would say, to allow them to think further and to give ideas. It's, you know, I think what I really love about the community is that we don't impose anything that's kind of intimidating for them. We actually encourage and allow them to be thinkers and builders. And that kind of resonates to how, you know, Chris approached the account managers before, and to Libby as well, in resonating in reflecting this approach to the entire team. So I'm just piggybacking on the idea because it helped us a lot, honestly, because the 1LD VS is still vanilla, I would say. We're still on our first year this coming November. We still have a lot.
We're still vanilla. Yeah.
there's still a lot for us to work on. And I'm honestly just proud to say that most of our VSs have been helping a lot of the processes up just because we allowed them to think about solutions, and we actually do it with them.
Yeah. I want to get to a question that's in the chat, Chris, about what if the issue about being in the seat, and that means physically in the seat if you're remote. You want to read that question?
Yes. And I told Nicole I'd tee it up. So she said, what if you have an issue with, and so she was talking about, so she said, what if I have an issue with them not being in their seat? She was joking, but it's very real for remote workers.
Yes. So we're going to go to story time. So this was a long time ago. Gosh, I think at the time I only had like five cleaners. It was a while ago, and I used a a known VA company within the cleaning industry that was recommended. And I hired my first remote person. This was before WootRecruit even existed. Okay. So WootRecruit has always been remote. As software, it's very common to be completely remote. It's a remote industry. But in home service or like even cleaning, it wasn't that super popular because this was even before WootRecruit. So this was like 2000, maybe 18, 19. It was before COVID. I can tell you that. And so I hired my first VA, and I have to say it was absolutely agonizing. It was horrible. It was bad. Every time like something would happen, every time the phone would ring, like every time I needed to talk to the person, they weren't there. They were like, oh, I went to the doctor. Oh, I'm getting gas. Oh, I'm at the grocery store. I drove my mom over here. I'm like, no, like, no. And I, at first I kind of thought, oh, this is just how it is, right? With remote people. Oh, this is normal. And then I was like, oh, well, I let them go. And I think I hired Vera after that, Chris, like Vera was my in-house salesperson. And so I let them go because I'm like, no, I can't handle this. Remote is horrible. And that's kind of left the bad taste in my mouth when it came to remote team members. And it was just bad. I fired them. Like literally I would call, and Chris even remembers it. He's like, you remember that? You just brought it up the other day. Remember that one?
Oh yeah.
Like your first remote person. And every time you called her, she was like sitting at the doctor or at the gas station, or like, she's like, oh, but I got my phone. I'm like, no, that's not how it works. And so I kind of got turned off from remote because they weren't sitting in their seat. Like you said, what if they're not in their seat? And, not until we started WootRecruit, until we launched WootRecruit, we really got into software. I had another approach to remote because it was in software. So it was, to me, it was different, right? I was still kind of closed-minded with remote when it came to my cleaning company. And, we grew WootRecruit and, some of the other softwares, and we got better and better and better at it. And the companies grew and we've added more people. And the first thing I did, because of that kind of bad taste that got left from my experience, I set clearer expectations. And for us, it's like, you have to be at your computer to be working. Like, I don't care if you're working from Cancun, but you will be on a computer while you're clocked in sitting at a table. Yes.
I will say this. I'm going to call out Maria. She's in here right now and she's going to hit me.
Oh, Maria's always somewhere.
She's literally at the beach at the laptop. She's working 100%. But the fact that you can change your environment and still execute to the fullest and have the fullest.
She's sitting at a table. Like she's sitting at a table and she's on her computer and you can see it in the background. So she's at a table. She's sitting upright. And she's working. Like for us, that's okay. You don't have to be confined to your office, but you do have to be confined to a computer and like sitting at a table.
Want to miss rotan either.
Yeah, rotan. Yeah. And so making sure, and so the way we prevent that is just making sure the expectations are clear up front and they are in writing and it's part of your onboarding process. So when it comes up, because we also have that, like, hey, we don't want you to tether from your phone. Just clock out and come back because it's slow. If your internet goes down, if your power goes down, like, we understand these things, but we need you to understand that I don't want to pay this, like, for downtime. You can make up your time later. You have to be at a computer to be considered clocked in. Now, your computer and you can be anywhere in the world. That's the benefit of remote. But you have to be at a computer. And so preventing that from happening is, so here's the thing, it doesn't always prevent it, right? You'll always get those people that try or want to stretch the limits. So you go to the library because we need a change of pace. I will tell you, working from home is one of the most boringest things ever. I know right now Rico isn't home because I can tell that's not his home background, but I don't care that it's not his home. He's here in front of a computer working. And we need a change of pace because I think sometimes it isn't healthy to constantly work like in the same environment all the time. I think it suppresses our creativity and we get bored. And, you know, and so anyways, we make it clear up front, and you'll always get those people that try to slide by, but eventually it'll come out. And the reason it needs to be in writing is you can use the 3-strike rule, right? The first time it happens, oh, shame on me. I must not have trained you or let you know that this was the standard. Here it is. Here's the standard. Make sure you read it. Second time it happens, oh, shame on you. You know the standard. We just talked about it. And the third time, we're done. Sorry, we're done. Like, you're going to have to go, you know, play on a different team. And so Dunkin' Donuts and McDonald's are my go-to, right? When the power is out. Yeah. And so one of those things is making sure that you have that standard. You set the standard. And, you know, that it's clear, but also that you use that standard as the rule.
So, gosh, okay. But yeah, back to that standard. And I see Nicole, somebody asked a question, and I want to get to it here in a second. But before I lose track, setting the standard and, oh my gosh, where are we at? No, I think that with the, you know, in terms of clarity is... My thought goes to what I used to do is when I wasn't sure if somebody was doing their job, and again, remote, it's very difficult to nail down, is what I used to do is try to hover, and I used to just like kind of poke at it and just fixate on it. But what I realized and what I noticed and coming through now and the way that we kind of work through remote is what I realized I didn't have before in those environments. And the reason why I kept getting these shitty people in virtual, it wasn't them necessarily, but it was me, because I never gave the transparency or the okay that it's okay to have certain things or to do certain things or to have your kids in the background. Because for the longest time, these virtual or remote people have been chastised by employers about the fact that they have kids in the background or the environment isn't ultra professional. And so I think that what ended up happening is that they were afraid to say certain things or to, you know, work a certain way because I thought they'd get fired immediately. And I think that once I started to open up transparently and to say like, dude, like, this is cool. Like, I love the fact that you got kids and certain things like that. They were more willing to stay in a certain work environment or work in a certain way and be open to it and share when things aren't either in the right position. Like, hey, my power just went out. I'm going to go ahead and come over here and it'll be a little bit crowded or busy, but I'm going to be down here. I'm going to be working, instead of hiding it, ignoring it, shirking it, and then burying it under until you say, oh, by the way, where were you at 4:15 PM? And then they got to go ahead and chase their tail to figure out, oh shoot, I was actually over here. And it's just, I think for me, it was having an element of transparency of not just what the expectations are, but what's okay in certain situations. Like what are you about, and leaning into that. And I think for remote people, it's actually having to condition them to get used to certain things. It's conditioning them to let them know that it's okay in certain situations, instead of being so formal, so rigid. I think that's really helped out for me to get people, you know, sitting in their seat, literally, Nicole.
Yeah. And then the follow-up question is with remote. So I want to be right now, there are 37 of us that work remote. On our team, Nicole, 37. And so we have really, really mastered this. Yeah, 37. I was like, wow. The other day we did a call. I think we had 39 people invited to our team call the other day when we ran the One Layer Deep game show. That was kind of fun. You know, your question too was, do you have them do like an EOD, an end of day report or anything like that? And then is it obvious sometimes when they are not, when they do not respond for long periods of time? So again, that goes back to having standards or a system, like having it in writing. We have it in writing and we train on it. Like, hey, you have to have your, we use Google Chat. And so you have to be available. So it marks you green when you're logged on, right? When you're logged on. If you're logged off, we're going to assume you're not here. And so having that, that standard to, you know, that you have to be available. And they announce themselves when they come in the morning. I even announce myself every morning, right? May puts that check mark on my good morning. it may take our attendance. announce ourselves in the morning. And then some people announce themselves when they go to lunch because they might be customer facing, which is if you're customer facing, you need to announce yourself in and out because if the phones are ringing or a customer needs something, they announce themselves in and out for lunch. And then they announce themselves at the end of the day. But depending on the role, you could have an SOD, which is a start of day report. That's more project-based, like your marketing people, your dev tech people. Or you could have an EOD, which is an end of day report, which is more customer facing people or team members, where their day is more in their job is more in the day to day versus more project based. So you could do an EOD, that's an end of day report, and every one of our team members do an EOD or an SOD. And yes, so we have them do that for us, and they're great. They're insightful. I can spot a red flag in 5 seconds, and they're great for Rico, who monitors the VSs. And then sometimes, and May gets them as well. May is my assistant, and she's like, "Oh, there's an issue. Like, there's an issue, Rico. You might want to see this." It gives you a pulse on what's going on before there's a problem, because you can kind of start to detect a problem, or if someone's disgruntled or has an issue or not feeling well about their, like, what's going on. But the second part to your question is, you know, what if there's a long time between when they respond? That's a standard. Set it. It's just like your standard on how fast you get to a customer who submits a quote, right? Speed to lead. There's a standard in your office. If you have a salesperson, you're like, "Oh, we have to answer the customer or every lead intake form within 30 minutes, within an hour, within 5 minutes," whatever your standard is. Same thing here. There's a standard. And they have to be available because they should be clocked in front of a computer. Now, unless they're on the phone, right? Unless they're on the phone, they should answer you within, 5 to 10 minutes. And that was one of the biggest red flags I had with the first remote person I had. She would never answer my call. Like, she was so, like, randomly all kinds of places. And the problem is to run remote, you have to have this high level of trust, right? And confidence in your systems. So, and your standards. The company sets the standards, not the people. Right? Because we have so many people in our company, we'd have all kinds of standards. They would just be all over the place. And set your standard. Do you put it in writing? Say, if you're using Leia, put it inside of Leia and say, "Here's my first game plan and here's the micro play. How fast we expect you to respond to us when we have a question." You set that standard. And then you can reinforce that standard. Actually, are there already ones from Rico in there?
I think there's dozens, actually.
Okay, so we gave you all, guys, we gave you almost all of our VS microplays. So if you want to start making your own Leia portal, we gave you kind of what we made for our VS program. Now it's all pieced out in separate microplays. You can go into the microplay library and steal a microplay and see what we use for our standard for certain things. But set that standard. And that way, if they're not available, then you have that. So here's the thing. Here's the hardest part of all of it is that you could have the system. You could have the standard. People will always, sometimes intentionally and sometimes not intentionally, break the standard, right? The hard part is having that difficult conversation when someone does it. And you have to have the conversation. You have to say, "Hey, 30 minutes went by and I didn't hear from you. What's up? Is everything okay? Something going on?" "Oh no, everything's fine." "Okay, well, just so you know, the response time is within 10 minutes. It can't happen again." That's the conversation. Here, who on my team knows that's exactly how she would have said it. I have a lot of people from the team, and that difficult conversation is saying, "Oh, here's the standard, by the way, just so you know, here's how we do it." We cannot let it build up. We cannot avoid that conversation. We can't let it build up. We can't let it get out of control. The faster you have that difficult conversation, the faster, right, things improve.
Yeah, that's great, Libby. And I know that we in particularly, because that was like, you could create an entire game plan and you call it SLAs. And we call them in software SLAs, there are standards, service level agreements. is how long or how short should things take? What are the expectations around it? So like you said, is standards, but we created the how we operate.
So we created a whole, I don't know how many sections there are to it. It's called how we operate. And I think that's like one of the most important things that you could work on that would probably be one of the easiest. Can you read how we operate? Just the topic titles, Chris, do you have them? Of how, what's inside of how we operate? So it has everything from, let's see if Chris can pull it up. I would think also there are micro plays inside the library. You could probably steal them as well or get them because they're part of the VS program. I put Chris on the spot. Well, I think the reason of how we operate is so important. Yes, sales processes are great. Yes, like how do you deliver an estimate? But how we operate, like I expect you to have a shirt on when you're on a Zoom call. We're never going to let Rico live that one down. it was a complete accident, by the way, but we're never going to let him live that one down. But it's how we operate, and it's very, very detailed about like, we have our no DM policies in there. Like, did you find it, Chris?
Yes.
Well, it is inside the VS portal. Rico could probably read off the titles.
Yeah.
I just want the sections. I don't need all the stuff in between.
Let me pull it up on my end. So the topics that we have here under how we operate are the three strike rule, the cameras on policy. There's also meeting framework, our time off and core benefits policy. We also have a tuition reimbursement program where our internal teams can get a hold of it. Our communication hygiene as well when it comes to customer facing approaches. We also have the zero inbox rule, which some of our VSs are also applying to their clients' inboxes, which is A-okay. We have our no DM culture, which by far is, I think, one of the most important policies that we have in place here at 1LD. We also have the 1LD policy itself into the how we operate. The micro move as well is also included here. Our strengths, weaknesses, and collaboration, which ties into our core values and culture building. Owning the outcome, which is also in part of our core values. Making things stupid simple. It is one of our important how we operate as well. Our gamer mindset, which is my personal favorite, to be honest. And putting it all together, you know, how the micro moves, how these policies and how our approaches come into one culture building play into how we operate. Those are everything, Libby.
Thank you. That was exactly what I wanted. And did you see how fast it was for Rico to find it?
It was all done through Leia.
It's all inside of Leia, inside the VS. VS portal. And so one of my favorite ones, and I love that you love the no DM policy, and that's not normal. That's not normal at all, especially, but we found that that's where, like, if we want to call it like the no drama, like the no chisme, chisme is like the gossip in Spanish, right? We prevent it because it can get like a little, and we have the same policy, guys, in my cleaning company, the same policy of no DMs. No, that will actually get you in trouble. And, or I have fired people over that. And because it's transparent. Also, that's how we end up repeating ourselves. If we need to teach somebody, answer a question, train them. If one person has the question, don't you think everyone would have that question eventually? And so one of my favorite parts of that, how we operate, and I totally was against this years ago, was the gamer mindset, right? Because I was like, oh, gamers are lazy. I don't like them. that's kind of how I thought. And now, like, that's actually something that we look for when hiring remote. we love the gamer mentality. I've never played a video game in my life. Maybe I played like Super Mario once when I was organizing. So I just got back from Oklahoma and I was organizing my aunt's basement. And I grew up in this basement. This basement is giant. Like, it's a giant basement. It's beautiful, but it had turned over the years. She's had death, like the death of her mom and dad, the death of her husband and her daughter. And the basement just started to become like this storage room of things she didn't want to deal with. But anyways, down there when we were organizing, I found the original like Nintendo and Atari. And I do remember playing Frogger when I was like a kid on the Atari. But anyways, I really changed my perspective on the gamers on efficiency, work efficiency, and typing skills, right? And you know, like our head developers, like, I've been practicing a typing game. I'm trying to improve my words per minute. I'm like, and we didn't ask him to do that. It's just something he's doing because, you know, he wants to just improve his computer skills. You don't see that with average people, like those high level computer skills. And so if they are remote, they need a level of tech or know-how. And we find that gamers are naturally really good at some things.
I'd like to piggyback on that one too, Libby, because Linnell here in the chat was actually curious about the policy. Now, this is my personal experience, Linnell, because I'm a gamer myself. I think what sets off or what separates, you know, a non-gamer person to a gamer person is the creativity that we put into the craft that we do. That's it. I think at top of my head, that's going to be the number one thing I can definitely say. When you work on, or just in my situation here, when I work on the VS program, if we're just going to put someone who, say, has an extensive experience when it comes to operations and marketing and sales, they'll mostly be doing the corpo side of things. Whereas, you know, if you get someone to work who is as creative and who is as resourceful when it comes to squeezing all the resources that we have or that they have here and making it into a reality, I think that's what sets off, you know, a gamer mindset in comparison to a non-gamer one. So I hope that made sense.
Yeah. And you know what I found too, to answer this question, is a lot of the gamers that we've hired for certain areas understand like workflows, like how things work together. They're more operational, believe it or not, versus, I don't know how to explain it. Maybe Chris, you could explain it a little bit better than me, but they're more operational. They understand like the architecture of how something works together, of how it builds on top of each other.
Yeah. And so typically, this is more so for those elite gamers, let's say, and I know Rico has played some elite games in his past, but it's about operational efficiency is the way that it relates or translates. Again, this is for those that are really invested in business and in their trade. But it's the idea or the concept that, you know, for those that are really competing in games, is it's all about not having any wasted motions. It's finding a way to do something either better but faster. And so it's something that's really cool because I saw that transfer into the work, because all of a sudden they were finding different ways to approach a problem inside of the business itself that I wouldn't have seen. And I noticed that it was because their brains are wired a little bit differently to look for different trends, different things. And so I think that's also a strong takeaway. And you'll see it in certain people is if you're asking the right questions of getting their input, getting their thoughts on how things are currently flowing or running and what their suggestions would be.
Yeah. Love this topic, by the way. We went from systems to people problem to remote problem, or how to fix that remote problem, to creating the standard. And one of the things that we look at is that gamer, right? The, you know, all, amongst the other, why do we look for people or like people that have that gaming background? And I will say, as we all age, what I found was a lot of people age out of it and do it just more for an occasional hobby than they do it like all the time. You know where I really started to like look for this was I hired and organize it. I hired a, you guys are gonna get a kick out of this. I hired a girl and what was I hiring her for? Her name was Vanessa. You'll remember her, Chris. Her name was Vanessa.
Oh yeah. And I remember exactly where she was sitting.
Yeah. And I don't know if I hired her for an admin or for sales. I can't remember. And, you know, we all, do you have computer experience? Yes. Oh, yes. I know how that. I didn't really ask. I asked if she was good at typing, but I didn't really get much deeper than that. Right. And so here comes, and I don't know why I didn't notice this in the interview. So I don't know if she had these fingernails in the interview or if she got them done after she got the job offer. But anyways, first day she comes to work and you all know in a company, we have to be efficient on the computer. We have to know how to type, and I'm not going to pay you to chicken peck, right? Like if you have to write a paragraph to a customer, I need that paragraph done and sent because the phone's ringing again. And so her first day, she comes in and she has these giant fingernails, like giant. And I don't have nice fingernails right now. I don't have my orange because we just got done renovating the building. But she had these long fingernails and she went to start typing on the keyboard and she couldn't. She was pecking, like poking it with her long fingernails. And I was like mortified. I was like, oh my God, like it's going to take her forever just to send an estimate. What is going on? And I said, hey, you know, by the way, I thought you said you were really good at, or you're efficient at typing. She goes, oh yeah, I'm great at it. And I'm like, well, it doesn't really look like that on the computer. She goes, oh no, I'm really good at texting, typing on my phone. Like, and she put up her phone and because you don't need your fingernails, it's all your thumbs, right? I was like, oh, I missed that one completely in the interview process. it was hilarious. I was like, shoot, it was mortifying. I wanted to die. I went in the office. I told Chris, I was like, oh my God, I have to fire her. I did on day one. I think it was day one or two. It didn't last long. But I mean, I thought I covered, I was like, oh yeah, I asked her in the interview, how good is she typing? And she, oh yeah, I'm great. And then I was like, what is going on? And she's like, literally these long fingernails, chicken pecking the keyboard. And we had real keyboards, not like a laptop, like real computers in the office with the keyboards. And her fingernails were missing because they slipped off and went in between the keys. It was agonizing. And then she's like, oh yeah, I'm great. I'm great at texting on my phone. I was like... And then she asked me if she could just do all the work on her cell phone. And I was like, no. So that was my story of why I then started to shift when I interviewed people on like words per minute, how well they type, what's their efficiency on a computer? Like, can they change screens? Do they know how to zoom in, zoom out? Like, can they, you know, use the hotkeys, which I'm not great at, but they need to be great at it. And we got a little bit more serious about, do you even know how to use Gmail or WordPress? Okay. Yes, it was great. All right, guys, we've been on for an hour. This was a great topic. If you want to go find some standards, right? Some policies that we've already made that we use in our companies, go into Leia, go into Playbooks and hit that, create a micro play. And there's an entire library of micro plays already given to you so that you can create that standard, set that expectation. And believe me, your employees will thank you for it because they want to know what the standard is. Right now, they could just be completely guessing. All right, guys, we'll see you on the next Tuesday call. Same time, same place, every single Tuesday.
Thank you.
Need help growing your business, but not ready to hire another employee? That's why we created the One Layer Deep Virtual Specialist Program. Our virtual specialists are trained in the One Layer Deep method, and they can help you with everything from building your customer service program to recruiting to operations to marketing and administrative support. So you can focus on growing the business instead of doing everything yourself. If you're ready to delegate with confidence, visit 1ld.co and learn more about our virtual specialist program.